I also appreciated the devotional. I'll greet you in Jesus' name also, and I appreciated the devotional this morning. What are we thinking about throughout the day? What are our thoughts? Something good to check ourselves. What do we dwell on? What has our attention? In our Sunday school class, there was mention made about spending a lot of time on a cell phone. Most of us have got cell phones. We've got internet access. We can look up anything we want. What do we look up? What do we spend our time looking at, reading, whatever? Just something for us. Just that verse that in Romans that Nathan used, be not conformed to this world. We need to be different. We don't need to be just like the norm to go along. And it's interesting, he started out in Romans chapter 12 there, and I decided to speak out of chapter 13. In subjection to civil authority. I think sometimes we get a little lax in some of our thinking, just especially in our driving, that's the main thing, but that's not necessarily where I want to dwell on. Although here, I think it was just Friday morning, it was about practical non-resistance in the beside the still waters, and so I'll probably use some of that throughout the message. But in chapter 13, the first seven verses is basically what I was planning to speak about today. So let's just go ahead and read that. Romans chapter 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. In the Beside the Still Waters, the verse that they use there, their theme verse is in 1 Peter 2, verse 13. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Sometimes we hear people say something like, well, for Pete's sake, you know, but this is not Pete. This is the Lord. This is for the Lord's sake. That's why we need to submit ourselves. And the first paragraph there, concerning civil authorities, Paul wrote to Romans 13 that they are ordained of God, and that whoever resisteth civil authority resisteth the ordinance of God and will suffer damnation or condemnation. This passage makes no distinction between laws that are considered serious and those that are not. But sadly, while many profess to be non-resistant, as Christ taught in Matthew 5:39, they will readily resist the power as forbidden in Romans 13, verse 2. We need to be consistent. Paul begins by addressing the fundamental question, where does human government come from? Where did the first government come from? It came from God. God ordained it. And then he says, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and the powers that be are ordained of God. The word power or authority is a broad word. It's the Greek word exousia, is the Greek word, which means right or privilege. An authority is anyone who has the right to do something. That is an authority. If your job gives you the right to make a certain decisions, when you're on the job, you are an authority. And seen in another light, an authority is anyone who has the right to make decisions that directly affect our life. In the broadest sense, all of us live in two relationships at the same time. We have authority, and we are also under authority. In other words, some of us might be a husband and thus the head of our home. So we are the authority there. But then some of us work for someone else. So at the job, we are actually under authority. And of course, we're always under the authority of God. You may be a teacher and thus have the authority in the classroom, but you're under the authority of the school board. So we are in authority and under authority at the same time. In this passage, Paul is thinking about human government, the civil government, like rulers and kings and queens, emperors, magistrates, presidents. Paul is not thinking of any one particular form of human government. There's numerous ones. Paul is not saying that American democracy is ordained by God, only American democracy is ordained by God. It's not the only thing. They're all. He is speaking of broad or general terms of all human government anywhere in the world. It's the institution of government that comes from the hand of God. And we need to think of the setting when Paul was actually writing this. Can anyone tell me who was actually in power when Paul wrote this? Anyone have any thoughts? Who was actually the biggest power?
Was it Caesar?
No. There was another one even higher than him, I think. Nero, yes. Thank you. Yeah, Nero was in power. He was a wicked ruler who hated Christians. He had them, he rounded up Christians and dipped them in tallow and then set them on fire as candles and set them in his gardens and stuff, burning as candles. He even ordered Rome set on fire and then blamed the Christians, setting off the first official persecution. And of course, we have largely forgotten about how wicked and pagan ancient Rome really was. Abortion flourished. Homosexuality was accepted as normal. The masses worshiped Caesar as Lord. Sorcery and black magic abounded. I don't think any government in American history has ever been as pagan as the government in ancient Rome. Yet, Paul said that all authority comes from God. It is in that setting that Paul still said we need to submit. He gave a very explicit directive: be subject to the higher powers or to the governing authorities. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He just said, submit, be subject to that. Nothing was said whether or not Nero was a Christian or a pagan, just the word submit. And of course, that's a familiar word used a lot. It's used at least 50 times in the New Testament. It means to voluntarily follow the direction of those in authority over you. Submission is not the same as obedience. though they are related. Obedience relates to the outward performance, while submission touches the attitudes of the heart toward those who are over you. This distinction is critical because you may not always be able to obey those who are over you, but you can always have the heart attitude of submission. There's a simple definition that might help us. Submission means believing that God is able to accomplish His will in my life through those He has placed in authority over me. Maybe I'll read that again. Submission means believing that God is able to accomplish His will in my life through those He has placed in authority over me. That's a crucial definition because it focuses the attention on God and not on the one that has the authority over us. The most important thing is the attitude of our heart, and that is actually the whole Christian life involved, is the attitude of our heart. You submit to the one in authority in a sense that you believe that God has put that person in your life for a purpose, and that God's will is somehow being done in your life through that person, even if we don't see it or don't understand it. God takes responsibility for raising up one leader and putting down another. In Psalm 75, verses 6 and 7, he says, "For promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. But God is a judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another." God is in control. He is the unseen hand at work in the nations of the world. God is in control. And that also means that our first president, George Washington, came into power by the hand of God. God allowed him or got him in power like that. And so have all the presidents that have followed since. And we as Christians need to believe that God sets people in power. And in these politically charged times, it's also good for us to remember that when Jesus comes back, I don't think he'll be riding an elephant or a donkey. In our zeal for certain moral issues, we may leave the impression that God might be a Republican or a Democrat, whatever, in our zeal for that, but we need to be careful. He is neither. He is the ultimate independent. Going into verse 2, "Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation." Paul draws a simple conclusion in verse 2. To rebel against authority is to bring judgment upon yourself. It may be judgment by God, but very probably it will be a judgment by the authority. And of course, if any of us would doubt that, next time you're stopped for speeding, try arguing with the officer and see if there won't be some repercussions. Going back to another part of the beside the still waters, he's got some statistics in there. To exceed a posted speed limit may seem trivial, but excessive speed is the third leading cause of all U.S. auto accidents, in which some 40,000 people are killed each year. And while a rolling stop at a stop sign may retain some momentum for pulling out onto a busy highway, some 700,000 crashes annually at stop signs result in 40% of all fatalities in intersection collisions. There is a reason for a stop sign. Then he goes on and says, "Do you use a handheld cell phone while driving? This is illegal in some places, and it's illegal in Tennessee. And it's distracting. Driver distraction is a leading cause of all auto accidents. And what about fish and game laws, building codes, fire laws? Is all of this just a bunch of legalism? Or does our Lord really mean what is recorded in Romans 13? Something for us to think about. And then going on, Paul introduces us also to the ministry of the government. That might sound a little strange to our ears for the government to be ministers. But in verse 4, twice he calls them ministers of God. It doesn't mean that they are necessarily saved, but that human authorities serve the purpose of God on earth. They think about that for a moment. The police officer, the sheriffs that drive around, patrol our neighborhood, our county here, are God's servant. And so is the IRS agent who audits your return. He's also in authority. Donald Trump is God's servant, and so is even Vladimir Putin in Russia is also God's servant. The same is true for every human leader, whether they know it or not. God has put or allowed them to get in power because God is in control. And this, by the way, is the basis for treating our leaders with respect. Christians ought to lead the way in showing honor to human authorities because we understand they are appointed by God. We understand that. This touches all of us on a personal level when we see leaders making decisions that seem to be clearly evil. There are times when, as a Christian, we must speak out in favor of what is right and against what is wrong. But no matter how stirred up that we may be, even when we think life and death issues are at stake, when we are speaking to those in authority, when we're speaking to those in authority, or when we are speaking about those in authority, we must treat them with respect. Because they are God's servants, and whom God appointed, we must not treat lightly. And on a side note, there's a lot of discussion and things, feelings going on, and about politics and things like that. But in this internet-driven age, we need to be thinking about that. How many of us have posted something on Facebook in anger or frustration? And just as we hit the post button, we regretted it. Now, fortunately, on Facebook, you can actually go in and delete it. But what happens? The immediacy of modern technology makes it easy to write foolish and angry things in a moment of passion that have you apologizing for later. And sometimes the consequences may cost us a friendship or worse. It might cause some divisions. So let's be careful what we say when we are angry. Let's be careful what we write when we are upset. And also be careful what you post on your Facebook page when you feel mistreated. According to Romans 13, all human authorities exist to do two things. To punish the wicked, for one thing. Verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. And that's why we have the police officers, the sheriffs, the FBI agents, the TSA agents, even that check our carry-on items at the airport. It's always a pain to go through the checkpoints. For us guys, take off our belts and dig our cell phones out and any kind of liquids and stuff need to go in a Ziploc bag. And even to get our computers out of the bag or whatever and to make sure it's out. And then we got to bend over and take off our shoes yet. And I mean, it's a hassle to go through that stuff. And of course, all of us, I think, that have gone through those type security things have really learned to appreciate the times before 9/11, when things were a lot easier, you could get through quicker. But that day is gone forever. But most people seem to just take that graciously, but every now and then there's one person that sort of messes things up and holds up a lot of the other people in the line. So to punish the wicked, that is what they are there for. But also in verse 4, to reward the righteous, for he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath on him that doeth evil. So if you are afraid, are you afraid of those that are over you? We don't need to be afraid. Do right and you will have nothing to fear. Of course, Paul is here talking about an ideal situation. We know that there are troublemakers all over the world and things are not always ideal. But the principle still holds. And troublemakers get in trouble when those who play by the rules don't. That is the ideal situation. In a fallen world, things sometimes get turned upside down, but it's still better to be a law-abiding citizen. It's still better. We can be honoring God. Criminals do get caught eventually. And of course, this passage ends with a statement about the Christian's duty to support the government. First, he gives the twofold reason why our support is important. Verse 5, wherefore ye must needs be subject not only for wrath, but for conscience' sake. We support our human government first because of the wrath, meaning we fear punishment if we don't. If we don't obey, then there will be a punishment. That's why you slow down when you suddenly see a police car set along the side of the road. Lawbreakers will be brought to justice. And second, we support government because of conscience' sake. That is, because we know that God stands behind every human government, working out his will for the human race. That means, to be more specific, Christians ought to be known as law-abiding citizens. So what is our... In fact, in this county, we've heard already that those Mennonites, they just go flying through here and stuff like that. Is that the reputation we need? Not really. That doesn't sound really law-abiding. And I'm talking to myself. I'm not pointing any fingers at anyone, that's for sure. Those that know me probably know my driving habits almost better than I do. But we need to be careful. If we believe what Paul said, it will make us better Christians and ultimately better citizens. And then verse 6 and 7, for this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. These verses are so clear that really we don't need to expound on them, really. Paul calls human rulers ministers of God. As such, they deserve four things from us: our taxes, revenue, respect, and honor. We may think that we are heavily taxed, and we probably are, as far as that goes, but hardly more so than in the first century. And there again, talking about in Paul's time, Rome had all sorts of taxes. They had an income tax, a head tax, a poll tax, a road tax, a wagon tax, a crop tax, import tax, export tax, a harbor tax, a bridge tax. That's just a few of the things that they had all these taxes to, that they were burdening people with. The Caesars liked to live in style, and it cost a lot of money to keep up their empires. So they taxed the people heavily so that they could afford to do that. But Paul still says to pay tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom. And paying taxes is a Christian duty. Of course, tax evasion is not only a crime, but it's also a sin. Sometimes we actually hear of some Christians being caught with tax evasion, and that's not a good thing. Ray Stedman tells of how in his early years he found himself frustrated because he had to pay so much in taxes to a government that, in his opinion, wasted most of the money. And that's sort of where we are now. The government does waste a lot of money. But so one year he wrote on the check to the Infernal Revenue Service. And it made him feel better until they cashed his check. It went through. They still took his money. And then he changed it to the Eternal Revenue Service. And they still cashed his check, and it went through. Finally, he said, "I repented of all my sins and now hope to pay my taxes cheerfully." He finally came to the realization that he just needs to pay his taxes and done with it. Most of us may never get to that far. It's hard to be cheerful about sending so much money to Washington, but at least we can have the satisfaction of knowing that we are doing what Jesus and Paul told us to do. We're paying our taxes. Jesus, as you remember, that came up about paying taxes. And so Jesus told them to go catch a fish. And then there was a coin in there. And they said, well, go take that and pay our taxes. So we do have the example there. There's a lot more that could be said about this passage. Questions like, you know, what if the government asks me to do something that goes against the commandments of God? Well, that one's got a simple answer, just like the apostles did. They said we need to obey God rather than man. That's pretty simple. But that, and I'm sure there's other things that might not have such a simple answer. But as we obey God in faith and trust, and the Holy Spirit will guide us in all ways of truth. So if we're under his direction, we still have nothing to fear. We just need to continue on. Now going on down to the last part of our of the Beside the Still Waters devotional there. Our talk talks and our walk talks, but our walk talks louder than our talk talks. What does our walk testify to our children and our neighbors? Many people view civil laws as mandatory or optional, depending on their personal preferences, but they rarely stop with that. That is the problem with having, you know, not having much of a conscience in obeying the laws of the land. It goes further. They usually have the same attitude towards church and scriptural authority. If we're lax in one area, it's very likely that we're going to be lax in another area. However, the Bible is not a cafeteria of taking what we want and leaving the rest. If our profession of non-resistance is not backed up by practice, we will convey a confusing message to those looking on. What about you? The question is, what am I displaying? What do people read out of my life? Do they see that I am a law-abiding citizen, and then backed up by a godly walk of life? Because if we try to have a godly walk of life, but we're not a law-abiding citizen, that doesn't add up either. So I think we need to take a look at how we respond or what our attitude is towards civil government. How do we respond to that? This time, let's kneel for prayer.